You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. We are disrupting aging one show at a time. All of our episodes are available anytime on demand at WPTF.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm your host, Mike Olander of AARP North Carolina, and we have got a great show for you today, folks. Chad Mullen, Director of Financial Security at AARP, is with us to talk about Social Security, the myths, the facts, and why this important program is a critical part of AARP's work and your long-term financial security. But before we get to our guests, ladies and gentlemen, as always, as almost always, I am joined here in the studio by the true talent of AARP Without Limits, as I like to call him, Mr. Mike Davis. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Well, thank you for the kind words, Mike, and I am doing well. I hope you are.
I am doing well. Happy summer to you. At the time that our folks are hearing this pre-recorded show, it is officially summer in North Carolina.
That is correct.
How are you How are you doing? We're off to a warm start for sure. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that? And we haven't got this talk yet. Are you a summer guy? Are you a fall guy? A winter guy? What are you?
You know, I just take it as it comes. My my wife is very much a spring and summer person.
Mm-hmm.
I just roll with it. I like to take wherever I find myself, I want to be content. So you know, I take advantage of the summertime, and I look at I'm digging the warmth. You know, I want to get outside. If it's cooler in the year, then I'm thinking, okay, fall. It's football season. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. But I'm good either way.
You just said that when you said that about your wife. I said, wow, my kind of gal, spring and summer. But then I like the way you just said it. Like, you know what, you got to enjoy all year round.
Absolutely. I try to, whatever's happening then, I want to take advantage of it and make that a positive focus. So, but I'm good. But yeah, I have to admit, it's easier to like spring and summer than it is the winter.
Some of us, for sure. And I'm glad you mentioned the thing about football. And that's kind of what I wanted to dig into here a little bit before we get into our conversation with Chad. The thing about like football, I do the same thing where I enjoy the, I have certain things in the seasons that I like to enjoy. I've got my winter movies I like to watch. And I think we might have talked about this before. The summer, man, it's time for the old Miami Vice rerun. Like, I mean, first two seasons of Miami Vice, man, they're just basically like an autoplay in my living room, right?
Yeah.
Love that. Have a nice cold drink out on the patio, real nice and hot. I enjoy it. Certain movies, things like that, I enjoy. And then we get to fall. I'm like, okay, it's time to flip that switch in your head, Mike.
Yep.
Because this season's coming to an end. And get in that sort of football zone, pull out the hooded sweatshirt, even if you don't quite need it yet. Like, get yourself mentally ready to start enjoying it a bit.
That's right.
So I got to ask, is there anything you like? I mean, aside from maybe swimming, going to the beach, the usual stuff in the summer, is there any, like, specific stuff you only do in the summer you don't do any time of the year?
You know, I think one thing, I love mowing the grass.
Really?
I love it. That is, I was talking with my wife about this just a few days ago, and she said, well, you know, our neighbor has somebody that comes and mows their grass. You know, you could do it. I said, no. Mm-hmm. No, I enjoy this. That's one of the chores that I look forward to every week. It's kind of my quiet time. I get out there. I think a lot when I'm mowing the grass, you know, because you get into that rhythm, you know.
Yeah.
And I've got a push mower, and I can do the whole, you know, front and backyard in about an hour. And I enjoy that.
That I don't have to cut the grass anymore, but I'll tell you, I was kind of the same way, except if it was really hot, it was like, okay, I got to get started early today because it's going to be, you know, hot and humid and all of that. Mm-hmm. Any? Do you have a favorite summer memory, either growing up or in your adult life?
You know, one of my favorite summer memories, now that you mention it, is actually going to the mountains in the summer. I would, you know, get away from the heat. We would go, my family and I would go to Maggie Valley. Mm-hmm. With my parents.
And where is that?
That's in Western North Carolina, between say Asheville and Cherokee, and just very peaceful, quiet little area there, you know, in spite of the four lane that goes through there. But the traffic slows down going through Maggie Valley, and I just love it. There's a little creek, Jonathan Creek, that runs along there, and you can get, there's several little hotels, motels along there, and they're right in front of the creek, and you can open the windows and hear the babbling brook go by in the evening. I just love it.
Wow.
That was one of my favorite memories.
What a description from the true radio personality here. Our folks listening, I'm glad you indulged a little bit in that, Mike, because our folks listening throughout the state will hear, all right, well, let's start Googling this. Maggie Valley,
let me tell you,
the Babbling Brook in the summer.
If you're a native North Carolinian, and I know you're not, you've right. made that clear, but if you're a native, you know about Maggie. Yeah, Maggie's a good friend.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
All right, well, I've got one before we get to Chad.
Yeah.
I thought about this on the way over here, so I'm prepared. I got to say, I had a lot of great summers growing up. The thing that stands out to me the most was actually in North Carolina. I think it was my first or my second summer with my family in North Carolina in Charlotte. And my son was in a preschool summer camp thing at the Y. And I had just gotten my first of five Dodge Challengers.
Nice.
I had five in a row. I was a little obsessed for a while. And he was obsessed with the song, what is it? 8 5 was it 8 5 7 6 3 0 9
Jenny,
right.
Yes.
He wanted to hear that song every day on the way to camp and back from camp.
8 6 7 5 3 0 9
And we would just play it over and over again.
Over.
That was the song for the summer. And what memories there at the pool with both of my kids, and it was really just you know, you think about those things with you know, my son now is too old to care about any of that, and he's embarrassed. And I'm like, oh, but you guys were so much.
Yeah, was so Tommy cute. Two-Tone.
Tommy Two-Tone, that's right.
Yes.
That
love
is
it.
Right.
Love it. That's in my wheelhouse. I love it.
All right. Well, let's switch gears now, Mike. Let's get to the good stuff. I'm really pleased to have Chad Mullen on the show today. He is the Director of Financial Security at AARP. I'm pleased he's with us because of the timing. The issue of Social Security is something that is always very, very important to older adults, certainly to AARP members. We know that Social Security has been in the news as of late. Certainly this year, we've heard about things related to customer service and so forth, things the government was considering and doing. And then, of course, the trustees report, which recently came out. And so I'm really happy to have him on here because he's really an authority on understanding the program and helping share that with people in pieces that are easy to digest. So I want to welcome to the show Chad Mullen. Chad, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, thanks for having me on here. Really excited. And just real quick, for the record, I do not like to mow the yard, even though I still have to do it. So I just want to get that straight before we get started on the real stuff.
Thank you for participating in that, chat. We appreciate it. Let's begin our discussion, if we could, with where we are right now. In recent months, we've heard a lot about potential changes to Social Security, including closures of Social Security Administration offices, services, switching from things you could do over the phone to in person, and then the accessing of personal information and Social Security recipients, all these things. Can you give us a quick summary of what happened, separating some of the fact from the fiction, and how things look now on that stuff?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And let me start by saying, you know, Social Security is a really unique program. There's besides Medicare, there's nothing else that you really pay into from your first paycheck to your life, right? To your final paycheck. This is money that you have earned through a lifetime of hard work. So our opinion on that is not only does it have to be protected, but if you call the Social Security Administration, if you go into an office, if you have a question, you should get your answers answered quickly, immediately, accurately, in the setting that you want. If you want to do it online, great. If you want to go to an office, absolutely. If you want to make a phone call, however you want to do it, you've earned that right. So that's where we start. That's our philosophy on that. And that's what we fought for a long time. And we have known for a long time that there has been a lot of issues around customer service at Social Security Administration. Hold times are often and still to this day over 2 hours to get through. If you choose the option to get a call back, you're tethered to your phone for 2-3 hours on average to get a call back. Right now, it's typically over 30 days to get an appointment in most offices. Now, it's not true in every office, but in most field offices, that's the average. If you're having to work on a disability claim, it can take almost a year to get the initial claim and then another year or two to resolve it if you have an appeal. So that has been going on for far too long, and it is still going on. Now, what we had this spring was sort of an extraordinary number of changes proposed with little notice and very short time. And so a couple of things that we started hearing about were first, a big reduction in staff that was part of a federal agency-wide buyout. And we saw a number of local field offices temporarily closing. That number really spiked. We did not, to be clear, no permanent offices have been closed. No offices have been closed permanently that weren't already scheduled for other reasons, like leases, you know, terminating, or the building had mold and you know they're going to have to completely redo it. But what we have seen is sort of this intermediate, intermittent office closure. That thing has popped up this year. And then Social Security Administration made a big announcement that they were going to basically make you either go online or drive into an office if you wanted to apply for the first time for Social Security benefits or Medicare benefits. That's a huge deal. I don't have to tell your listeners. I mean, if you live in a rural area, you can be pretty far from an office. Maybe not everyone is close to has the ability to do some on a computer or wants to. So we really fought back on that. We've to this point sent over 3 million emails to Congress, hundreds of thousands of phone calls. And where we're at right now is those have been repealed, and we're back to just trying to improve that good customer service.
Well, thank you for that update. That is quite a list of things, and I appreciate you addressing each of them, because it's something we, of course, at ARP have been hearing at the state offices, seeing some things that we've been seeing in the news headlines and social media feeds and all that, and appreciate you separating some of the fact from the fiction, because one of the things we talked about here on the show and some episodes ago is it's really hard to advocate for something if you don't have the right information. And because we've heard, what are you guys doing about this? Well, that's not actually happening. Sorry, because they heard it on social media. So appreciate you kind of hitting the reset button for us on some of those things and giving us an update. We're going to go take a quick break here, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chad a little bit more about Social Security, including how this has been something important in his life and his family's life, and also what are some of the things that you really need to know about in terms of other areas of fact and fiction. This is AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back.
AARP is working hard to make sure people in North Carolina are getting the most out of life. Whether it's helping you stay healthy, save more money, care for loved ones, or simply have some fun, AARP is making a difference in communities across the state. You have a wise friend and fierce defender with AARP. Learn more about progress being made for older adults in the state by listening to AARP Without Limits. You can find the latest episodes of AARP Without Limits wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, that we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, a recommendation, or a suggestion for a future guest or topic, please send us an email, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. We've been speaking today with Chad Mullen. He's the Director of Financial Security at AARP. We've been talking about Social Security, what's been going on this year, lots of information and misinformation regarding the program and proposed changes to it. Chad, I want to take things home a little bit more with respect to this issue. Social Security, is obviously an important program for older adults, and for many families, it's very, very critical. Public policy is something that generally doesn't interest people, but personal stories do. And they often help paint a picture of why people value a particular program or an issue. And I understand that for you, growing up in Oklahoma, Social Security was an important piece of your family story. Tell us about that.
Mike, I really appreciate you asking that question. I think so much of the debate, especially here in Washington, D.C., around Social Security always involves huge numbers, right? 70 million, you know, nearly 70 million people receiving Social Security. We hear, average payments, those sorts of things. Behind all those numbers, it's actual real people living, getting by, and Social Security makes a huge difference. And in my family, as you can tell from my accent, I am, not from Washington, D.C. originally, grew up in Oklahoma. Most of my family grew up in small rural towns and went through a period where a lot of poverty, a lot of disruptment and, whatever the economy was at that time. And in my own personal family, my great-grandmother lived in a very small town called Wetumpka. And, as her and her husband were getting close to retirement, he passed away. He was actually died in a workplace incident and, had essentially no savings, did not have a pension. And, my grandmother, my great-grandmother had never really worked, still had a child at home and two young children who were just becoming adults, would have been in just total abject poverty, right? If not for Social Security. That Social Security check gave her the ability to stay in her home. And as time progressed, she actually moved her cousin in with her. And they both were solely relying on Social Security for essentially all of their income. And later, they moved in another friend named Aunt Edna that I'll confess, I had no idea she wasn't actually an aunt or even related to our family at all until I was an adult. But we had Aunt Edna and Annie and Georgie all living in this little house in Wetumpka. And because of Social Security, they were able to stay in that home. Georgia was 101 when she passed away. My great-grandmother Annie was 99. And turns out not to be Aunt Edna, was, I think, 97 or 98 when she passed away. And they were able to live independently in their home, have a great quality of life, and do things that everyone should be able to do. They're able to go to church and buy groceries and live pretty comfortably. And that's the important thing about Social Security. There's real people behind it. And you fast forward to today. I mean, my parents are salt of the earth, blue collar, working class, hardworking Americans who have retired now. They were fortunate. They were able to put away some savings, some private savings in a 401k as they worked. But it's because of Social Security combined with those savings that they have a decent retirement. They get to do a little. They have a RV and they get to travel a little bit and camp out. They've got two. They raised two honorary boys, but now they've got two sweet granddaughters and they get to spoil them a little bit. And if it weren't for Social Security, that wouldn't be an option either, right? They would have just a little bit of savings that they would really have to stretch. So I think it's really important when we're thinking about Social Security, especially in the policy debate. The thing that's always talked about are just these mind-boggling numbers because the program is so big. I mean, there's 183 million people paying into it. There's over 69 million people receiving Social Security. But behind each of those checks is a story. It's a lifetime of hard work. And it's real people that are either surviving or getting that retirement that they have worked so hard to earn, throughout their life. And without Social Security, none of that would happen. So, I always just want to tell folks, take a minute. And one thing I would ask your listeners out there, if you're on Social Security right now and you know how important it is to you, let your kids and your grandkids know, right? I mean, that's a big, important thing. Yes, we're advocating for our members, but we're advocating for the next generation and the next generation after that, too. And if you can let your kids and grandkids know, I don't know, Mike, how your family is. We don't talk about money in my family. you know, my dad does, you know, it's rude, right, to talk about money. But it's important to let the younger generation know just how important security is for you. We have done surveys every 5 years since 1985. And if you go back to 1985, people in their 30s and 40s thought that Social Security wouldn't be there for them. And if you think about that today, they're probably getting Social Security, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, you talk to people who are 30s and 40s, they don't think Social Security is going to be there for them. And I guarantee in 25, 30 years, it's going to be there for them. To let people know, let your friends know, and that's so important.
I really appreciate you sharing all that, Chad. Thank you. And ending on that note there that you just did, because that takes me to the next question. One of the reasons why there are a lot of people, younger people, who think that Social Security isn't going to be there for them is because of the solvency issue with the trust funds. I know there's a couple of trust funds with Social Security, but the one that pays out the benefits that we're talking about here. Could you just sort of give us a real quick overview? What are the trust funds? Why were they created, and what is the status of the solvency?
Yeah, and let me try to do this in a way that doesn't put everybody to sleep. So when Social Security was, when we did the reforms in 1983, Congress and leaders knew there was going to be a population hump, right? So baby boomers were going to retire at some point, and Social Security would need to pay out more than they had coming in. So that's just a natural population cycle. So these trust funds, they changed the formulas to collect more money in the 80s and 90s and 2000s than they needed, so that they could pay that out in the later 2000s as the baby boomers matured. So this is all totally normal thing. So right now, what you hear a lot about is this insolvency date that was changed to 2034 just yesterday in the latest trustees report. It's kind of bounced back and forth between 2034 and 35 over the last few years. But the important thing to know about that is, if Congress does absolutely nothing, you're still going to get over 80% of your benefits. So it's not that Social Security is going bankrupt or it's going away. The worst possible scenario is a 20% cut to your benefits. Now, that is a very bad scenario, and no one is going to let that happen. And AARP is definitely not going to let that happen. But that's the worst possible scenario. It's not going away. It has never missed a payment in 90 years. It's not going to for this generation or the next generation. And so you should know that. We're going to continue to fight for that. And that's where you sort of, I think, really have to pay attention while you're reading and how you're reading it. Because when I hear insolvency, I just think bankruptcy, right? That's mm-hmm. that's the thing that comes to my mind. Oh, they're insolvent. They're out of money. That's not the case. And it's not going to be the case. And we're going to make sure and fight to keep Social Security there. And that's the role the trust funds play in that process, is to help make sure, you know, to sort of bridge that gap until currently 2034 or 2035, depending on the year. And yeah, we're going to keep fighting to make sure that no one sees a benefit cut.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing that. Before we get to our last question, just wanting to note that they have a, we have a finite amount of time. You know, the sooner that Congress gets its act together and decides to put together a solvency solution, for the next, you know, X number of years or decades, the easier it is, right? The longer you wait, the more drastic the changes need to be, whether it's, increase in the taxable cap or other types of changes that could take place. So certainly, they've been talking about this for years and years, and it's like, okay, this administration or the next is going to have to be really taking this on seriously. One last question for you, Chad. This summer, Social Security is turning 90. You mentioned 90 years, never missing a payment. AARP is helping commemorate this. Could you just quickly give us an overview of what's going on across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. We are celebrating across the country. Again, this is a program that, along with Medicare, has completely transformed aging, completely transformed how people live, especially now that people are living longer than ever, definitely before these programs started. So we have events happening all across the country in every state, and we're inviting members of Congress to participate and join. We just, if you're an AARP member and you're listening, you should have just got a bulletin a few weeks ago that was completely dedicated to it and shared some great stories and facts and timelines. We are covering the airwaves, TV, radio, internet, all sorts of things, sharing all the positive things that Social Security has done and has contributed to people's lives. We are, in fact, I'm not sure when this will air, but at the end of June, all of our folks like you, Mike, are going to be here in Washington, D.C., and we're going to go up on Capitol Hill. We're going to talk to members of Congress about Social Security and caregiving and other things. So we are just celebrating, doing all sorts of fun activities and just really taking a minute and saying, wow, you know, 90 years, never missed a payment, transformed aging in America. And let's make sure we can do this for another 90 and another 180 years after that.
And just so folks know, here in North Carolina, AARP North Carolina is going to be doing 6 events throughout the state on August 14th in partnership with some other organizations and senior centers, where we're going to be featuring individuals, AARP members who are also turning 90 this year, and talking about how valuable the program is to them. So, Chad, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We are out of time. Really appreciate you being part of the effort that AARP has in protecting this program and educating people about it. That is a wrap, folks. I want to thank Chad Mullen for being our guest. Thank you to Mike Davis for production. Thank you for listening. This has been AARP Without Limits. I'm Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. We'll see you next time.